It's time for Message in the Bottle, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in Bangor, sponsoring and delivering the goods to you, courtesy of Brian Dable's best friend, Eric Meehan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. You haven't seen the latest news, have you?
The Brian Flores news? Yeah, I just saw it.
Yeah, I was wondering when something like that would happen.
Class action suit, it sounds like, against the National Football League.
And a couple teams, including Brian Dable's new employers.
Yeah, imagine that.
Well, I've imagined it for years. As I said, I've kind of wondered when something like this is going to happen, and I'm a little embarrassed. Well, not being surprised. For anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, you can go check out ESPN or your source of sports news. But basically, the rich white men's club that is the NFL is finally being called on being that. So that's fun. That said, I'd like to congratulate Tom Brady, another rich white man, on his retirement, and just simply remind him that the fourth best Manning quarterback, as far as I'm aware, and Cooper, we heard some reports on, beat him twice in the Super Bowl. So sleep on that while you lay next to Giselle. So, moving on to wine, which is what we're really here for, and we can talk about everything else at another time, because, oh, man, it's very, I don't like it, like, I try to be a fan, right? Like, we all try to be fans, and it's really embarrassing when your team just is, like, embarrassing, and not like, bad we can all deal with, but, like, really showing the world for what it is. Like, yeah, well done. Anyway, like I said, moving on to wine. Last week we talked about the Grenache grape, and I was thinking about, I do need to, at some point in the near future, talk about the Chardonnay grape, but this is the month, February, that we start to talk about purity in the bottle, wine, agriculture, and this is such a hot-button topic that I thought we'd kind of dive into it, and I can talk about Chardonnay and all the other grapes that I think are, you know, kind of relevant, as it were, over the next couple months. But we'll talk about the life cycle of wine, and I kind of think this is important because, of course, we finally got dumped in snow, and the reason I like to talk about this topic right now is that vines and we are in what we call dormancy. And it's exactly what you think. It's like we're going to huddle in our... And very often, make no mistake, you know, depending on who you are and where you are, people are going out and, like, digging out the vines, each individual vine, perhaps, and making little wells, you know, or they're just accepting that they're all completely buried by snow or whatever. In fact, I've got vines outside my house right now, buried by snow. That's okay. Grapevines are what we call perennials, right? So they die off in winter and then rebloom every year. But there are some people, depending on where you are and the particular life cycle of that particular grape in that particular region, you may be thinking towards what comes next, which is bud break. But at this time of year, assuming that you can actually access your vines, you're doing pruning. You're trying to figure out which tendrils look like they're going to be the dominant ones and produce the best and strongest fruit. But then, yeah, soon comes what we call bud break. And bud break is exactly what it sounds like. And I'm sure a lot of you are gardeners. You get it. But basically, you start to see the beginnings of life on those vines. And that is a time when frost is extraordinarily dangerous. And that's something that happens. Basically, if you know, you're in a part of the world, much like Bangor, where it's kind of, maybe it's freezing, maybe it's not. No, it's not freezing, everything's good. Oh, it's freezing again. And that includes a lot of places, especially, you know, places near and dear to my heart, like the Loire and Burgundy and Champagne, things like that. They're very subject to frost, and that is why you see these magnificent pictures of gas pots out in the vineyards, and these flames, like for you know, running all down the length of these vines, and it's just tremendous. And that's just people trying to keep their livelihood going. And then, yeah, you start to see the tendrils and the tiny grapes. And again, this is all in places that are like a little farther south, because it's still kind of horrible up here. We do have the hybrid grapes, but all of our viticulture, even if you have, like, you know, hybrid grapes like I do in the backyard, this is all delayed several months. This isn't, I'm talking about, you know, in places where you can actually grow things. Sorry, that's true. someday, hey, global warming, keep going. So what the winemakers need to start to think about next is canopy management, right? So when you start to have actual growth on the vines, you start to grow leaves, right? And the leaves are, you know, what gives you photosynthesis and, you know, gives life to the plant itself. But if in vines in general, if left unchecked, they just kind of go crazy. They don't really want to grow grapes as much as they want to grow the vine and leaves, and just kind of they're like 16-year-olds. They're just all full of hormones and yeah, let's go and let's and like, no, why don't you sit down and do something productive like grow grapes? No, let's do all this stuff. It's like no. Sit down, relax, grow grapes. And that's pruning, right? That's basically, I need to prune my teenagers. I'll talk about that later with my wife. Anyway, moving on. But yeah, no, they do. They would grow into big, bushy plants, and so humans have learned over the millennia to control them and to sort of channel the energy into growing the grapes. You know, otherwise, what would we drink? Flowering. And then we get into, now you have the little grapes, and they're kind of growing a little bit, And then we come into the time, and usually June, July, depending on where you are, where it's called Valaison, which is the French term for truthiness, or what was the Stephen Colbert one? Truthfulness?
Truthiness, yeah.
Truthiness. But this is where you actually discover what sort of grape it is, because up until then, they're all sort of, you know, unripened green grapes. And so if you're going to be something other than a white grape, you are going to start developing purple, dark hues, etc. And even if you're a white grape, I mean, there's, you know, your Pinot Gris and your other things that don't actually have white grape characteristics. They're much darker in terms of, you know, even hanging on the vine. And then certainly if you ferment the juice with the skins, I mean, they take on like an orange hue. You're trying to determine ripeness at that point, so that you're talking about, you know, mid-August to September, talking about the Brix, which is basically the ratio of the sugars and minerals and other solids to the liquid, and figuring out if you're ready to pick the grape and smush it and turn it into a juice, which will then ferment into as much alcohol as that Brix measurement will allow, right? Like, so if you only have a certain amount of sugar that can be eaten by the yeast, the thing will only reach a certain alcohol level. Which is why, by the way, just sort of, you know, tangentially, people have like blueberry wine and stuff like that, and they're like, wow, this is really sugary and stuff. It's like, yeah, it's because they chaptalize it, which means they add sugar to the broth, as it were, before it ferments, to boost the alcohol potential. Because blueberries on their own don't have a lot of sugar. Grapes have more sugar, as I'm sure anybody who's eaten a blueberry versus a, you know, a ripe grape can attest to. So that's just sort of a thing. I assume I'm running out of time.
A couple of minutes left.
Okay. So then, so your life cycle of the grape at this point has sort of ended. They've picked it. Usually, the better winemakers try to pick it at optimum times. A lot of people will pick it like at night when it's cooler, because the sunlight can start to affect the picked grapes. But obviously, in a lot of instances, things are not ideal, but you try to do the best you can. Obviously, with labor shortages, et cetera, especially amongst, for instance, formerly foreign labor that may or may not be legal, harvesting is harder. And not just here in America, but in other parts of the world, there are similar immigration issues. But rest assured that a lot of the wines you have enjoyed have been originally harvested by people that are not from the country of origin of the wine. You smush the grapes and you ferment it, and then you have, we'll talk about what comes next in times future, but you either basically ferment it really quickly and sell it off, you age it in stainless steel, you age it in barrels, you bottle it immediately, you bottle it 10 years. We'll get there. In the meantime, I just want to say, please, everybody, continue to take care of each other. Get your shots, get your boosters, mask up. We're asking everybody to continue to mask in the store. We obviously, unfortunately, lost a dear member of our downtown community just this past Sunday to COVID. So it's all still real, and we are asking everybody to continue to please just do the right thing. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, as always, Eric. Have a good week.
Move on with that.
Yeah, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.
Eric May and Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the bottle here on Downtown.